Well, tonight we continue our 7-year journey through the Bible and the Old Testament and specifically the book of Genesis. And you know well by now, class, right? You've been so good at this, so don't let me down now. The book of Genesis. The word Genesis means... Yes, it means beginnings. If you don't know that, write that down. That is key because that word beginnings, why is it the title of the book? Because so much has its beginnings in the book of Genesis. Whether you're talking about man, marriage, the universe, government, evil, sin, all these things have their beginning in the book of Genesis. And we're kind of using that as our outline for our study through the entire book because the first 11 chapters is really the beginning of all nations. No matter what your ethnic background is, no matter what your results were on 23andMe, your story begins in the first 11 chapters in Genesis. You are a descendant of Adam and Eve. More specifically, you are a descendant of Noah and his wife, and then one of his three sons and their wife. We descend. We were all, our ancestors, obviously, are all a part of that. But then in chapter 12, the book of Genesis gets very specific because this book is telling us a story, and the hero of that story is who, class? See, 2 for 2. You guys are amazing. Yes, Jesus. And Jesus in his earthly body was a Jew. And so when we get to the New Testament, if we don't have the Old Testament, we'll think, well, who are these people living in the Middle East? And what is this promised Messiah? What are they talking about? This is the value among so many of the things of the Old Testament, as we call it, the Jewish scriptures, as the original owners of this book call it. This is the importance of this because it teaches us about the history of the Jewish people, the prophecies of Messiah, so that it all makes sense by the time we get to the Gospel of Matthew. And we will, just buckle up, we'll get there eventually. But tonight, we are working our way through Genesis, and we have come to the third patriarch, because the second half, Genesis 12 through 50, gives us the story of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the three patriarchs of Israel. And then one of Jacob's sons gets very specific, the story of Joseph. And tonight, we're continuing by looking at Jacob. We've seen many studies about him already, and as we have, Jacob, as you remember, is a man with many sides to his personality. He's got many emotions. And I think all of us can relate to that because we have many sides to our own personalities. And if we're honest, sometimes those personalities can turn on a dime, right? You can be happy-go-lucky, having a great day. Someone cuts you off on the 78 and you are full of wrath instantly. Like, my life was in danger. Like, it just can change on a dime. It's true of all of us humans. I was reading one commentator on this section and he was encouraging young men that just because Jacob had 4 wives, that is not something the Bible wants us to follow. In fact, he went on to say, you don't need young men to have 4 wives. 1 is enough. They will change personalities so often, it'll feel like you have 4 wives. Now, I see your angry faces, but that's what I read. That's not what I'm saying. Don't get mad at me, precious ladies. Don't prove his point. Don't prove his point. Sorry, just a little levity to start tonight. But anyways, what is true for most of us in the room, our moods and our attitudes can change at a moment. And Jacob was no exception. As we go through the text tonight, I want us to notice 3 different sides to Jacob. Please write these things down, pray them in, think them through. We will see determination from Jacob. We will see frustration from Jacob. And then finally tonight, we will see panic in the life of Jacob. So look at these one at a time. We pick it up where we left off last week, and that's in chapter 30, verse 25. And we see the determination from Jacob's life. Verse 25, chapter 30, it says, and it came to pass when Rachel had still borne Joseph, that Jacob said to Laban, send me away that I might go to my own place in my own country. Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you and let me go. for you know that my service, which I have done for you. And Laban said to him, please stay. If I have found favor in your eyes, if I have learned by experience that the Lord has blessed me because of your sake. Then he said, name your wages and I will give them. And Jacob said to him, you know how I have served you and how your livestock has been with me. For what you have had before I came was little, and it's increased to a great amount. The Lord has blessed you since my coming. And now, when shall I provide for my own house? So he said, what shall I give you? And Jacob said, you shall not give me anything if you will do this thing for me. I will again feed and keep your flocks. Let me pass through your flocks today, removing from there all that are speckled and spotted sheep, and all the brown ones among the lambs, and the spotted and the speckled among the goats. And these will be my wages. So righteousness will answer for me in time to come when the subject of my wages comes before you. Every one that is not speckled or spotted among the goats and the brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it's with me. And Laban said, oh, that it were according to your word. So he removed that day all the male goats that were speckled and spotted and the female goats that were speckled and spotted and every one of them that had some white in it. And all the brown ones among the lamb, and he gave them into the hands of his sons. And he put 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban's flocks. Now Jacob took for himself rods of green poplar of the almond and chestnut trees, peeled white strips in them, and exposed the white which was in the rods. And the rods which he had peeled, he set before the flocks in the gutters and in the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, so that they should conceive when they came to drink. So the flocks conceived before the rods, and the flocks brought forth streaked and speckled and spotted. And Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face toward the streaked and all the brown of the flock of Laban. And he put his own flocks by themselves and did not put them with Laban's flocks. And it came to pass, whenever the stronger livestock conceived, that Jacob placed the rods before the eyes of the livestock in the gutters, that they may conceive among the rods. But when the flocks were feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger were Jacob's. Thus the man became exceedingly prosperous. He had large flocks, female and male servants, and camels and donkeys. For 14 years, you remember, Jacob served his uncle Laban for free. Well, not really for free. He was earning the right to marry, first of all, Rachel. And when Uncle Laban snuck in Leah in there, you remember the one whose eyes made your eyes hurt or whatever was going on with her, snuck her in there. And he said, don't worry, I got to marry off the older before the younger. You work for me for another 7 years and I'll give you Rachel as well. So this man has been working for 14 years. And now that time is up, he tells Laban, I'm out of here. I'm leaving. I'm going back to my family. I'm going back to my homeland there in the promised land. And Laban says, wait, hold on. I realize that I'm blessed because you're with me. Your God blesses you, and because he blesses you, he blesses me. So he says, name your wages. You can have whatever you want. And the first thing I would love us to notice tonight in the text is when we work as unto the Lord, when we have a work ethic, a work ethic, whether it's in school, at home, at the job site, when we work as unto the Lord to please the Lord, people notice. It doesn't mean they're automatically kind, but people notice. Whether it's the world or fellow Christians, people notice you as a diligent worker. Laban says, I have learned by experience the Lord has blessed you. He saw it personally. So, Christians, we ought to be the best workers our boss has. We should be the best students we can possibly be. You say, well, I'm a little, okay, well, the best student you can possibly be. The best neighbors, the best friends. You see, here's a little secret. God loves to bless those who are his people. That was the original plan for the nation of Israel. God wanted Israel to follow his laws, to follow his ways. God would bless them. Why? Why? So that the nations around them would look and say, what is it about your God? What is it about these rules that you have? We want that God in our lives too. It was supposed to be blessing, evangelism through blessing. That's what God wanted to do with Israel, but you know, for most of their history, they decided not to follow the Lord, and it didn't exactly work out that way. That was God's plan with Israel, but listen, friends, I believe that's what God wants to do with us as well. We follow his word, not to make him love us more. You're not going to make God love you anymore. He loves you more than you can possibly imagine. It's not to make us more saved. You are saved by the finished work of Jesus Christ on the cross and nothing else. That's not what we do. We follow God's law because it's the absolute best way to live. And as we do, God blesses you. I can't tell you how many times I've had people say to me, oh, well, you don't understand, Jason. You're just so lucky. I'm like, lucky? Again, this is not about me tonight, but like, I've had diabetes since I was 10. My parents divorced when I was 5. I had my eye taken out of my head and repaired while I was still awake, and stage 4 cancer. I'm like the three-legged dog named Lucky is who I am. It doesn't fit. Like, I'm not lucky, but I will tell you this. I am blessed by Jesus Christ. I'm blessed with you guys. Like, I'm a blessed man. And listen, I'm not perfect, but you know what? I try with everything I am to follow this book and say, we're going to do this. And God just says, oh, great. And he starts to bless. Not so other people will say, why are you so lucky? So they say, I want to take this book seriously. I want to follow what it says about my marriage, about parenting, about life in general. And yes, there's blessing associated with it. That's what God wants to do in every single one of our lives. And that's what he was doing with Jacob. And Laban recognizes it. And he says, whatever you want, whatever you want. And again, it was normal in this culture, in this time, for someone who was a great employee to say, I want 20% of your flocks. So he would take 20% out and get 20% from that moment forward. That was standard. And I'm sure that's what Laban was expecting. And I'm sure he was going to try to whittle him down to 15%. But Jacob doesn't say that. He says, let me just remove all the speckled and spotted sheep and lambs out of your flock, and we'll separate them. And then the lambs and the goats that are born from now, the solid color ones, they belong to you, Laban. And the speckled and spotted, they belong to me. And again, what we're told is that most of these animals are born one solid color. And Laban knows this, thinks, that's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. He's wanting just a tiny bit. It would be kind of like today, a business executive up for vice president, when he's at his negotiation for his salary, says, can you afford to pay me half minimum wage? Can you afford to pay me $8 an hour? Well, that company was even a fraction intelligent, they would be like, yes, sign right here. I don't want my $1 billion parachute. I want $8 an hour. Sign here. Yes. That's what Laban is doing. Yes. It doesn't seem that it's possible that's what he wants. But then we read something crazy happens. Jacob, as the flocks are eating and mating, he puts these poles in front of them that he strips so that they're speckled and spotted and streaked. And it says that as the animals look at these speckled and spotted streaks on poles, they start having speckled and spotted babies. Now, I love this book. I trust this book with all that. I've told you before that if you can get past Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, then the rest of it shouldn't be a problem for you. I have no problem with God parting the Red Sea and doing miracles. But then we come across passages like this, and we go, wait a second. That's not how DNA works. You can't put polka dots. If you're breeding puppies, you know, at your house and you put a speckled things in front of your puppies, you're not going to get Dalmatians. That's not how that works. That is not how DNA works. And most of us know that. And so our atheist friends are like, you know, I was reading today. That's not, they saw that on the internet. I was seen on the internet today. And well, what do we think? So what do we say? Because we do believe this book. So what do we say? Is this some new farming technique that we're not aware of? You know, it maybe some have speculated the sap got into the water and created a mutation. I don't know. One commentator, a guy by the name of Nahum Sarna, and don't worry, he's not the guy that said, don't worry, just marry one wife and she'll act like four different wives. It's not the same guy, so you can receive from this guy. He argues that it was known in ancient times that the more vigorous animals of the flock were single-colored hybrids. Therefore, by careful observation, to which the animals are more energetic, the breeder can determine which single-colored animals carry recessive genes for spottiness. Cerna goes far to say is that Jacob may have done this elaborate procedure of arranging the peeled sticks to disguise his empirical technique. The truth is this. We don't know in this day and age what Jacob was doing. But whatever was happening, listen, here's what we do know for sure. It was the Lord. Because we'll be told later in the chapter, next chapter, that Laban is going to change Jacob's wages 10 times. Meaning in this season, yes, Jacob gets all the speckled and spotted lambs and goats, but then Laban changes it to the solid colors. And yet the flocks now start having solid covered offspring. In other words, it was the Lord. In fact, we're told in chapter 31, we'll read it soon, that God had given insight to Jacob by telling him to ask for the speckled and spotted animals. It says, verse will be behind me, it happened at the time when the flocks conceived that I lifted up my eyes and I saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked and speckled and gray spotted. So could it be the sap? Maybe. I don't think so. Could it be that Jacob had insight that the vigorous animals were single colored hybrids and developed this elaborate scheme of poles and rods to hide the fact he was just using selective breeding? Maybe. But the best answer is the Lord did this for Jacob, no matter what Jacob did. Jacob is determined to obey the Lord and what God told him to do. God told him, ask for the speckled and spotted. And I'm sure Jacob, this isn't his first day as a sheep breeder. He knows, wait a second, Lord, they're mostly born with solid colors. God says, ask for the speckled and spotted. And Jacob, really, for the first season in his life, he's obeying God. And what is God doing? He's honoring the fact that Jacob is obeying. So whether or not the spotted poles had anything to do with it or not, I think it is clear God is blessing Jacob's obedience and determination just as he will bless your determination to follow him. You know, Paul says to the Corinthians, whatever you do to the Lord, do it heartily. Like, just go for it. Like, God, this is what you're telling me to do. Sometimes we understand it. We go, wow, come on, I didn't think of that before. And it makes total sense. But let's be honest, Christians. Sometimes God tells us to do something, write a letter to somebody, send someone an email, talk to someone that doesn't like us. And we go, oh, Lord, that's not going to work out. Can I lovingly challenge you? You be determined to follow Jesus Christ. You be determined to obey him even when it doesn't make a lick of sense. And you know who will show up on the other end of that obedience? Jesus Christ will show up on the other end of that obedience because that is who he is and that is what he does. So God is blessing Jacob, but at the other side of the ranch, Laban is upset, and that brings out another side of Jacob, and that's frustration. Look in chapter 31, a little bit of reading, but it's okay. It's a great story. Look at chapter 31, verse 1. Now Jacob heard the word of Laban's son saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all his wealth. And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. And the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your forefathers and to your family, and I will be with you. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field, to the flock, and he said to them, them, I see your father's countenance, that it's not favorable toward me as before. But the God of my father has been with me, and you know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said, the streak shall be your wages, then all the flocks bore streaks. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given it to me. And it happened at the time when the flocks conceived that I lifted up my eyes and I saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked and speckled and gray spotted. Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes now and see all the rams which leads on the flock are streaked, speckled, and gray spotted. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land and return to the land of your family. Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, is there still any portion of inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us and has also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it. Then Jacob arose and set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Padan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. What? And Jacob stole away unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river and headed toward the mountains of Gilead. And Laban was told on the third day that Jacob fled. And he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days. And he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said, be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, what have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me and carried away my daughters like captives taken with a sword? Oh, he's very dramatic too, this Laban. Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp. Sure you would have, bro. And you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in doing so. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night saying, be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. And now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods? Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? If your God can be stolen. I mean, just pause there for a second. The God of your fathers, he says to Jacob, woke me up last night and said, don't you dare touch a hair on Jacob's head. That's the true living God. He like wakes up people and says, whoop, 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 listen, listen, and directs it. And he says to Jacob, why did you steal away my gods? Dude, if your gods can be stolen, they're not very good gods. Anyways, okay, verse 22. And Laban was told on, oh, we already read that part. Where did I leave off? Where am I? 31? Wow, there's no, I just skipped right there. Okay, thank you. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you. For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. And Laban went into Jacob's tent and Leah's tent and into the two maids' tents, but he did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household idols, put them in a camel saddle, and sat on them. And Laban searched all about the tent, but he did not find them. And he said to, and she said to her father, "Let it not displease my lord. I cannot rise before you, for the matter of woman is with me." And he probably got out of the tent as quick as possible. He searched, but did not find the household idols. Then Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? Although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that you may judge between both of us. These 20 years I have been with you. Your eyes and your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young. I have not eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn by beast I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was in the day, and in the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your flock. And you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. And Laban answered and said to Jacob, These daughters are my daughters. These children are my children. And this flock is my flock. These guys are both kind of whiners. All you see is mine. And what can I do this day to these daughters or these children whom they have born? Now therefore come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let us be witness between you and me. So Jacob took a stone and set up a pillar. And then Jacob said to his brethren, gather these stones. And they took stones and made a heap. And they ate there on that heap. And Laban called it Jegar Sadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. And Laban said, this heap is witness between you and me this day. Therefore, its name is called Galeed, and also Mizpah, because he said, may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from another. If you afflict my daughters, or if you take other wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. And Laban said to Jacob, here is this heap, and here is this pillar which have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness, this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap and this pillar to me for harm. And the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. And then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called the brethren to eat bread. And they ate bread and stayed all night on that mountain. And early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned to his place. This chapter opens up, I know it was a long one, but it opens up by saying the countenance of Laban had changed, meaning the look on his face was no longer favorable to Jacob. If you ever get a chance to do public speaking, you know what Jacob is talking about. You look out into a crowd like this one, and you look at faces looking back at you. And most of you, smiles, looking down at your notebooks, writing. I like that even better. But some of you have a resting angry face. You just do. I know you don't mean it. I'm not saying like you. You are angry, but some of you can't help it. You just sit there and you just and I can't tell you how many times I've been looking out on the congregation and I see someone sitting there just, and then when I stand out there after the service, I'll see one guy I'm thinking of in particular, just the whole service. And then walks up and he's like, man, that was so good. And I'm like, really? because that's not the vibe I was getting from you while you were sharing. It's so much better to look at people that are smiling and happy. This is what Jacob is communicating. You used to look at me, and because I was making you rich and your son's rich, you were just like, keep going, bro, keep going. But now you look at me and it's... And Jacob says, I knew it was time to go. It's time to go. But before he does, catch this, don't miss this. Before he does, he has to get his wives on board. He comes to Leah, he comes to Rachel, and he says, look, you know how your dad has ripped me off? You know how I've served him faithfully? If it wasn't that God was in my corner, we would be broke and poor. And so it's time for us to go. And he has to get them on board before they move. And I just want you to see that, because, you know, most of us, if we imagine what life was like in ancient Iraq, we know what life is like in modern Iraq in the year 2026. So, you know, you go back 3,000 years, you just imagine. I don't think any things were better for women around there. But on this case, that's actually not true. Archaeologists have found documents on the ground that there was a rule in Mesopotamia, the land of the two rivers, that it was against the law to move your wife or wives out of the country without their permission. Like, you couldn't just put a bag over their head and say, we're going. Like, I think some of us picture the Middle East operating. You had to get them on board for you to be able to move. And so, when we first had the book of Genesis, archaeologists hadn't discovered that yet. And so, you know, like, oh, come on. Like, that's such a modern thing. That's not how it worked. And then they're digging around the ground and they're like, oh, that's why this book that always tells you the truth the way it is. Jacob has to get his wives on board, and his wives are totally on board. They say in verse 14, excuse me, is there any inheritance or portion left in our father's house? This is the reference to the fact that, you know, Jacob worked for 14 years for them. And what was supposed to happen, remember, he was trading work for a dowry. Normally, a young man came with a dowry and he said, this is to marry your daughter. That dowry was stored in case that guy died or divorced you. She would come back to her father's house and she would have a nest egg to live on. That was the whole purpose of a dowry. So what Laban was supposed to be doing was taking the money Jacob was earning for 14 years and setting it aside. That is not what Jacob was doing. That's not what Laban was doing. He was spending it and saving none of it. So he didn't have to pay Jacob anything, got his girl's expenses off his books. This was a win-win for Laban. So the girls are saying, there's nothing in our house for this. Let's go. And they were off. And Jacob leaves. But then 3 days later, Laban hears, and he is coming with malice in his heart. Now, a couple of things I want you to notice in this chapter before we move on to our final chapter tonight. And that the first thing I want you to notice, that Jacob is so frustrated by this event. But the first thing I want you to notice is Jacob is frustrated about flaws in Laban's character. But Jacob has the same flaws in his own heart. Jacob is mad that Laban has deceived him. But that's who Jacob was. His name is Heel Catcher. Also translated deceiver, because he started by trying to grab his brother's leg coming out of the womb, like, no, I want to be the firstborn. And it didn't stop at birth. He tricked his brother into selling his birthright. And when his father wouldn't go along with it, you remember, it was just last week, he's gluing hair all over his arms. And yeah, I'm really my brother Esau. This guy's a deceiver. Now he's mad at Laban for deceiving him. Do you see the disconnect? But listen, here's the lesson, church. It is amazing how bad our sin looks on other people. It's amazing. It's amazing. And that's why Jesus exhorted us to examine the plank in your own eye before you remove the speck in your brother's eye. We're not studying through Matthew right now, but I know Pastor Rob has taught you this because I learned it from him. You realize a plank is made out of wood, and the speck is literally, the word is sawdust. In other words, the thing that irritates you about someone else That's a little fraction of what you struggle with. That's what Jesus is saying. So when you encounter somebody, anybody, and you're like, I can't stand them. Just a little tip. You don't need to come to me and confess how you've been. But please, for the love of Jesus Christ, examine your own heart. Why does this person irritate me? Could it be that what they are is kind of what I struggle with too? God knows sometimes we are so hard-headed, he's got to bring people into our lives to show us a mirror of who we really are. And I know we like to say, not me. Okay. But next time someone irritates you, just, hey, what is it about them? God, is that going on in my own heart? That's what Jesus says to do. We need to take the plank out of our own eye before we start to take the speck out of our brothers. Well, secondly, not only is Jacob's frustration, he's getting upset about flaws in Laban's character, he's got his own heart, but secondly, Jacob's anger, though it appears justified, isn't based on all the facts. Laban shows up, why'd you take my daughters? They're mine, they're this. And he's like, stop it. I worked 14 years for your daughters. I worked 6 years for your flocks. That's ridiculous, these are mine. And this thing about your idols, he's like, I didn't take your idols. Search my whole house, and whoever has the idols, you can kill them. Wow. Jacob is mad, and it gets worse when he checks everybody's tent. And of course, Rachel has them, but she pulls this little, put it in a camel sack, sits on it. Again, church, if your gods fit in a camel sack, if your gods can be sat on and hidden, like you realize that's not the God you serve, right? It's not like, I can sit on him and he goes away. That is not the God you serve. God's like, yeah, anyway, so this is amazing to me, this whole deal. But as soon as Jacob's like, go ahead, put it before me. What's going on? First of all, why would Rachel do this? Why would she take her father's idols? Well, there's something that archaeologists have discovered in the Middle East. It's called the Nuzui tablets. And on these writings, we find insight into this culture. And here's what it says, that whoever possesses the family's gods, strengthen your claim to the family's inheritance. That's what we have figured out archaeology-wise. So it could be that Rachel stole them so that someday when her dad passes away, she could come back and say, his wealth is mine. Look, I've got the household idols. That could be why she did it. Or it could be she's just having a hard time letting go of her past. I think both are probably possible. She's trying to hold on to things of her past. We all understand that. We have things that sometimes just will not be released from our hearts. Some of the things you struggle with when you first got saved, they were gone instantly. Amen. Isn't that true of your testimony? There were some things you struggle with. You walked forward at a crusade, or maybe in this room, you gave your life to Jesus and God instantly took some things away. And you were like, oh, what, you know, maybe you struggle with like cussing. And all of a sudden you get saved, and the next month someone cuts you off and you're like, oh man. And you're like, oh man. Jesus is changing my life. Cause that was not what you used to scream when someone cut you off. Some things God takes away instantly, and some things that we struggle with before we were Christians, the radical, sad truth is we still struggle with them as Christians. They're still around. And they break our hearts and we want them gone. But can anybody relate to what I'm saying? Maybe it's just people that come to church on Sunday morning only. We're Wednesday nighters. We don't struggle with stuff like that. It's just the SMOs. It's just the Sunday morning only people. Just them, the SMOs. But anyways, no, we all know what this is like. This is like, and Jacob says, let them die. That was the penalty in that culture for stealing household gods. You were put to death. But Jacob is angry, and listen to me. He's angry without all the facts. And that is something that we can run into even as believers all the time. You know, the book of Proverbs says it so well, doesn't it? I want to read it to you so that you just get this verse. I didn't have this when I put my notes together, so it won't appear on the screen. So just like old school, listen to me read to you for just a second. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 17 says this: "The first one to plead his case seems right until his neighbor comes and examines him." I can't tell you how many times I've sat down in a counseling session as a pastor with one of the two people, whether it's a husband or wife or two friends that are upset each other, and the one is pouring out their heart, and I'm just like, no, evil, ah, I can't wait to get my hands on him. And then a week later, I sit down with him, and I'm like, huh? Whoa, wow, that's different. And then I get them together, and I'm like, both of you are not, you know, this is what happens, friends. So I'm trying to exhort you. Jacob is upset. I didn't take your idols. Let whoever die as a... The idols are in your favorite wife's tent, bro. You don't know it, but you guilty. And as we go through life, we hear things. And sometimes the first person to tell you is like, wow, that's a wow. I didn't know that. Be wise, precious men and women. Be like Jesus. Well, he doesn't need both sides. He knows instantly, right? But be like the Bible exhorts us to be. Say, okay, man, I'll pray on that. And make sure you get the other side before you react, before you make a decision, before you go off the deep end. Just, I see Jacob and he is all bent out of shape and he doesn't have all the facts. God doesn't want us to react in anger. That's why it says in the book of James that we are to be slow to anger and slow to speak and quick to hear, quick to listen and say, well, I want to figure this out, but slow to react. You know, one of the greatest examples of this is usually the text that people use all the time to defend their outbursts of wrath. What am I talking about? You, if you're someone that struggles with anger, I know what your favorite Bible story is. It is where Jesus goes into the temple and turns over the tables and makes a whip. If you struggle with anger, that is your favorite Bible story because you go, that's my Jesus. That is him. He just had it up to here and he's kicking things over and whipping people. You're like, I love that Jesus. I feel that, but Mark's gospel contains a little extra insight that the other gospels leave out. And that's the fact that Jesus walks into the temple, takes a look at all this debauchery, and it was all the ripping off God's people in the court of the Gentiles, the very place where evangelism was supposed to be happening. These leaders were turning people off to Jesus. And Jesus was bothered by that, rightfully so. But Mark's gospel tells us he went back to Bethany, prayed, sought the Lord, and it was the next day he starts kicking over tables and whipping people. So what does that tell you? It tells you that Jesus' reaction wasn't, we should know this innately, it wasn't the flesh. It wasn't him reacting just, I've had it and I'm upset. Like that was not what was going on. He took it back to his Father in heaven and said, how would you like me to deal with this thing that's making me really angry? And his Father in heaven said, you turn over those tables and you make a whip. You see, there is time for anger. There is. The Bible says, be angry and don't sin. Now, there's the hard part, right? There's the hard part. But it doesn't say never be angry. There's, again, this to bring up this walk going on Saturday, Abortion should anger us. Not that we're mad or angry at young ladies, not that we're mad or angry at even doctors, but the fact that people are killing millions, that should anger us as the church. It should. It should motivate us to pray. It should motivate us to walk. It should motivate us to do what we're doing. It's okay to get angry. It's not okay to sin. And that's why we've got to hear everything that's going on so we can make the right judgment call. Well, Jacob, he's not there. He's just angry, doesn't have all the facts. And so these two deceivers, they come up with a covenant between each other. They say, let's gather stones and make a covenant. And Laban calls this pile of stones Jagar Shaduha, which is Aramaic. Why? Because he's from Haran and they speak Aramaic. It's the only Aramaic word in all of the Torah. The first five books of the Bible, the only Aramaic word is right here in Genesis chapter 31. Jacob calls it by a Hebrew name, Galeed, or Mizpah. And again, they mean the exact same thing. What they mean is the Lord watch over us while we are apart. Mizpah. The Lord watch over us while we're apart. And I find it funny, because that's my personality, as you know. Some of you are like, I wish you were a little less, more serious, less funny. Okay, yeah, that is my struggle. But I love when there used to be Christian bookstores. And you'd walk into this Christian bookstore, and they would have these beautiful signs, Mizpah. And the people would say, oh, I'm going to get that for Aunt Susie. She's going away on a trip, and I want her to know that I want the Lord to watch over us while we're apart. I would see that. I would hear that. And as a Bible nerd, it would make me laugh. Because the Hebrew and the Aramaic is a little more severe than the Lord watch over you while we're apart. What it's really saying is, I don't trust you, you rat. So God watch you while I can't. That's the indication of both the Aramaic and the Hebrew. I don't trust you, so while I'm away and can't put my eyes on you, you rat, God watch over you. So next time your Christian neighbor says, Mizpah, now you know how they really feel about you. Just so you know, now you know. Well, one more section tonight. Jacob's going to leave Laban and really the nation of modern day Iraq. He's going to head back to the promised land. And as he does, ooh, Esau is coming. Esau is coming. Look at chapter 32. It says there, now, so Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him. And when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's camp. And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. Then Jacob went to the messengers before him, to Esau, his brother in the land of Seir, to the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, speak thus to my lord Esau, that your brother, your servant Jacob says, I have dwelt with Laban and stayed there until now. I have oxen, donkey, flocks, males, female servants. I have to send to my Lord, that I may find favor in your sight. And the messengers returned to Jacob and said, we came to your brother Esau, and he is also coming to meet you with 400 men are with him. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. And he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels in two companies. And he said, if Esau comes and attacks one company and attacks it, then the other company which is left will escape. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac and the Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your family and I will deal well with you. I am not worthy to be the least of your mercy or at least of all your mercies and of all the truth which you have shown to your servant, for I've crossed over this Jordan with my staff, and now I've become two companies. Deliver me, I pray, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he come and attack me and the mother and with the children. For you said, I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he lodged there that same night, and he took what came came to his hand as a present for Esau, his brother. 200 female goats and 20 male goats and 200 ewe and 20 rams and 30 milk camels with their colts, 40 cows, 10 bulls, 20 female donkeys and 10 foals. And he delivered them to the hand of his servants, every drove by itself, and said to his servants, pass over before me and put some distance between the successive droves. And then he commanded the first one, saying, when Esau, my brother, asks you and asks what you say to him, to whom do you belong and where are you going? And whose are these in front of you? And you shall say, they are your servant Jacob's, and it's a present sent to my lord Esau. And behold, he is behind us. So he commanded the second and the third and all the follow the drove, saying, in this matter you shall speak to Esau. And when you find him, you shall say, behold, your servant Jacob is behind us. For he said, I will appease him with the present that goes before me. And afterwards, I will see his face and perhaps he will accept me. So the present went on before him, and he himself lodged that night in the camp. And he arose that night and he took two of his wives and two of his female servants and his 11 sons. And he crossed over the ford Jabbok, and he took them and sent them over the brook, and he sent over what he had. And Jacob was left alone, and the man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. Now he saw that he did not prevail against him. He touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, let me go, for the day breaks. And he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he said, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed. And Jacob asked, saying, tell me your name, I pray. And he said, why is it that you ask about my name? And he blessed him there. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, for he said, I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved. Just as he crossed over Peniel, the sun rose on him, and he limped on his hip. Therefore, to this day, the children of Israel do not eat that muscle that shrank, which is on the hip socket, because he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, in that the muscle shrank. When Jacob first leaves the promised land, he is met by angels at Bethel. And he has this dream that we call Jacob's ladder. And as he comes back to the promised land, he is met again by angels. And he calls the name of this place God's camp. And what a security Jacob must have felt. God was with him. But then he finds out Esau is coming to meet you, and he's got 400 armed men. Do you remember how Esau and Jacob left one another? Jacob deceiving his father, Esau wanting to kill him. Now his brother's coming with an army of 400. So Jacob panics. What is he going to do? And the first thing Jacob does when he thinks he's in trouble, he begins to panic. And then secondly, he plots. He says, what am I going to do? I know, I'll divide into two groups. Esau will only destroy one and the rest can escape. And I want you to notice that after God shows him, I will be with you, he still panics and he still plots. I bring this up because I know I can be guilty of this. Maybe you can as well. We're moving along, smooth sailing in our lives, and then bam, here comes the trial. Something unexpected, some disappointment, some trial. We immediately begin to panic. What am I going to do? I thought she was the one. I guess I'm going to be old and single forever. What am I going to do? I lost my job, the bills, the car. We panic and then we plot. I know how I'll win him back. He won't be able to resist me. I'll take out a loan and get a second job for the car. It'll all work out. All the while, just like Jacob, we have the promise that God is with us, that God is working for our good, but somehow that's not enough. So we panic, we plot, and what we really should do is what Jacob does next. He prays. He panics, he plots, and then he prays. And even though he starts out by blaming God, which is so typical, isn't it? He says, God, you said you would be with me, but now Esau is coming. And I just see the Lord in heaven saying, was it me that told you to glue goat hair all over yourself and cause it? Was that, why are you blaming me for that? But we do it. You know people that do it. If you don't, like, they've made 100 bad decisions and they're like, I can't believe what God is doing to me. God didn't tell you to marry that bozo. God actually warned you through 6 people. Don't do that. Like, why are you blaming God for the situation in your life? Sorry, I'm getting off track. But anyways, so Jacob begins to pray. And at first he's blaming God, but then listen to me. He starts reminding himself of God's past faithfulness. He says, when I left Canaan, All I owned was a stick. That's pretty sad, isn't it? Sticks are free. The only thing I owned was a stick. And that's free. And now you've made me two companies. God, you've been so faithful. And friends, it's so important to remember when we're panicking, we need to remind ourselves of God's past faithfulness. Why? Because God's past faithfulness is the evidence he will be faithful in the future. Because God, unlike you and I, he doesn't change. He remembers God's faithfulness and he repeats the promises. He says, you told me to come home. You told me you'd be with me. You told me you'd take care of me. And this is what we need to do. Why? Are we repeating God's promises because God doesn't remember? Is that why? It's like God's like, oh, oy vey, I forgot about you. Oh, yeah, I will take care of you. Oh, my bad. No, we repeat God's promises not for God's sake, for our sake. I need to be reminded that God will not change. God, you said you'd take care of me. God, you said you're going to see me through. So this is going to happen. He is repeating these promises. We should do that. But then Jacob takes things back in his own hands. You ever do that? Before we criticize Jacob, we need to examine our own hearts to see if we've been guilty of praying piously and then depending on our schemes and resources. There's something in us that will run to prayer, but then take the situation back into our own hands. Something has convinced us that we know what's right. Something in us are sure that we can do it better. And I fear that we can be like that. I know I have been in my past where we fall on our face, we pour our heart, we give an issue totally to the Lord, and then we take it right back. God, help us to not be that way. Help us to teach us to trust in you. Jacob's going to learn, but he's going to learn the hard way. One time he encountered God was at Bethel. God said, I won't leave you. I won't be gone. The second time he encounters God is here at the end of chapter 32. And we looked at this on Sunday. I don't have time to get into it tonight. But God, what does he do? He hurts Jacob. He touches his hip and it goes out of socket. And where the enemy in our own flesh says, I don't know if I like the fact that God hurts somebody that loves him. And we don't like it, not just because it's a Bible story. We don't like it because we on occasion have been hurt by God. But if you were with us on Sunday, you know the truth. I hope you do. If not, listen close. The reason sometimes God allows terrible things to happen to us is not because he doesn't love us. It's because he absolutely does. Because what is he doing in Jacob? He's given him a new nature. What's your name? He says, my name's Jacob, deceiver. He says, no longer, your name's going to be Israel, a name that means governed by God. He says, you're going to be governed by God. And then he changes his legacy because his kids don't remember, oh, he was a great deceiver. Oh, he was a great plotter. What do the Israelites remember about their father, Jacob? They changed their menu because of how God changed him from this moment forward. They won't eat that hip socket because that speaks of the brokenness their father experienced and was a changed man from that day further. Look at chapter 33. We'll read quickly and we'll be done. Now Jacob lifted up his eyes and he looked, and there was Esau coming. And with him were 400 men. 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. And he put the maidservants and their children out front. You totally know where you stand with Jacob. He's like, you two girls stay here, your kids. You two girls go that way with your kids. You stay out front. And Leah and her children behind, and Rachel and Joseph were last. And he crossed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near his brother. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. And he lifted up his eyes and saw the woman and children. He said, who are these? He said, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. And then his maidservant came near and their children and bowed down. And Leah also came near with her children and they bowed down. And afterwards, Joseph bowed down and Rachel came near and she bowed down. And Esau said, what do you mean by all this company which I met? And he said, these two are to find favor in my sight, O Lord. And Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. And Jacob said, no, please. If I've found favor in your sight, then receive my present from my hand, inasmuch as I have seen your face as though I've seen the face of God. And you were pleased with me. Please take my blessing that it might be brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me, and because I have enough. And so he urged him and he took it. And Esau said, let's take our journey. Let's go, and I will go before you. But Jacob said to him, my Lord knows the children are weak, and the flocks and the herds which are nursing were with me, and the men should drive them one hard day, all the flocks would die. Please let my Lord go on before me, and I will lead on slowly at a pace which the livestock can go before me, and the children are able to endure until I come to my Lord and Seer. And Esau said, now let me leave you with some of my people who are with me. And he said, what need is there? Let me find favor in your sight, my Lord. So Esau returned that day and on his way to Seir, and Jacob journeyed on to Sukkoth and bought himself a house, and built himself a house. That's not today's world. He bought himself a house. He got a real estate agent and everything. He built himself a house, and he made booths for his livestock, and therefore the name of that place is called Sukkoth. And then Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan. When he came from Padan Aram, he pitched his tent before the city, and he bought a parcel of land which he had pitched his tent, and the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. And then he erected an altar there and called it El Eloroi Israel. A couple of quick things and we'll be done tonight. As these two encounter, as they're exchanging gifts, Esau says, take it, take this back, brother. I have enough. And Jacob says, no, I have enough. And what's not clear in English, because they're the same word in English, but it is really clear in the Hebrew, is they're saying two different things. The word translated into English as enough in verse 9 is the Hebrew word rab, and it means much or many. When Jacob says, I have enough, in English, it's the same word in English, but Jacob uses a different Hebrew word, and it's the word kol there in verse 11, and it means everything or all things. You see by this the growth in Jacob's life. He spends the first half of his life thinking he's got to deceive and trick and do all these things to get ahead. Now that he's met with God, now that God has broken him, he realizes life is not about sheep and goats. I have everything I need is what is implied, because I have the Lord. And I hope you feel this way, friends. Paul said to his friend Timothy, godliness with contentment is great gain. That's where we need to be, and that's where we need to stay. Jacob has gotten to the place where he's trusting God, he's following God, and I wish the chapter in there, but it doesn't. We get to learn about his journey a little more, and it says that he gets to the outside the promised land, and he stops in a town for 8 years called Sukkoth. And I think you can better understand what this town was like if you say it with a little Texas accent. Not Sukkoth, but Sukkoth. Because it did. It was wicked. It was terrible. And he stayed there for 8 years. And when he finally moves, he moves to Shechem. Listen. It's 12 miles short of where God told him to go. Bethel, less than a day's journey. It was close, but it was not where God wanted him. And we'll discover next Wednesday night the horrific things that will happen to Jacob and his family, all because this dude stopped 12 miles short of where God called him to be. And as we leave tonight, what has God called you to do? What's your reaction to it? Are you determined to do your best and trust the Lord with the rest? Or are you frustrated and agitated? Have you begun to panic? I don't know how this is going to work out. Or are you praying, reminding yourself of God's past faithfulness and his promises to you? Have you gone all the way and completely obeyed? Or do you find yourself tonight 12 miles short, so to speak, of what God has called you to? Realize, precious ones, God still loves you in Shechem. He still loves you in Sukkoth. He loves you there. But you'll suffer and have a hard time. So instead, let's go all in. Let's go for it. God loves you and wants to bless you. Amen.